Our testimony this morning is taken out of Judges, chapter 7, verses 33 to 40. As I was saying, it's part of this long story, and I'll be the first to admit that you won't hear me talking that often out of the histories of the Bible. Just because so often there's so much there to just tease apart and know what to do with. Let alone just to know who the characters are, let alone what's going on. But this is the story of Gideon and one of the starts where he is being called into service. Judges 6:33-2. All Midian, Amalek, and the Kittimites joined forces and crossed over and camped in the Valley of Jezreel. The Spirit of the Lord enveloped Gideon, and he sounded the horn, and the Asherites rallied behind him. And he sent messengers throughout Manasseh, and they too rallied behind him. Then he sent Asher, Naphtali, and they came out to meet the Manassehites. And Gideon said to God, "If you really intend to deliver Israel through me, as you have said, here I place a fleece of wool on the threshing floor. If dew falls only here on the fleece and all the ground remains dry, I know that you will deliver Israel through me, as you have said." And that is what happened. Early the next day, he squeezed the fleece and wrung out the dew from the fleece, a whole bowlful of water. Then Gideon said to God, "Don't be angry with me. If I speak just once more, let me make just one more test with the fleece. Let the fleece alone be dry, but all the dew cover all the ground." So God did so that night. Only the fleece was dry, while all the dew covered the ground. I would have to guess that many of us take pride in our gut. It's something that we feel that we do well, and that we relish a sense of intuition and pride in making a decision of by what the facts say, sure, but even more by what the sense of the situation and our read of what's about to happen really is. By all means, do the research. Check for signs and signals to tell you what might be, but then also listen to that native inclination that tells you what to do. And between those channels, you should have a fair sense of what's there. I'm guessing for many of you, that's, when it comes down to it, a lot of how you function in the world and how you have a sense of what to do and when to do it. And there's a lot to be said for that. And I'm guessing that there's many reasons to say so because, well, I just knew it was the right time to do it. I know that I value my gut intimately. One of the things that I don't like about modern technology is GPS. As helpful as it is at times to find the specific places and ways and details in a foreign land, I like a more general sense of orienteering when getting from point A to point B. I just still have to just do the large stuff by freehand and then turn on the technology once I've gotten to where I'm going. And there's many of times where I hear the exasperated GPS voice pleading with me as I blow yet one more recommended U-turn. To say nothing of my impatient wife. Most of the time, the gut works out, and sometimes it does not, catastrophically, I'll admit, but That's the fun of the thing. Get what you're yelling about, just knowing what's there. Our lives are like that. We have to do so many things by way of decision. And we are always making decisions. Think about the decisions that you've made already this morning. You decided to stop hitting snooze on the alarm clock, to get out of bed, to get ready for the day, what to wear over one shirt or not another, and whether to actually come and be here with us today. On it goes, big and small. We are always making decisions, so much so that it just sort of blends into the background noise of our lives. To live is to decide. And if we thought about every decision as momentous and as changing as it could be, it's just a recipe for paralysis. We don't go into full analysis mode with every decision because we just can't do that. And so we just sort of categorize things of, well, what are the big decisions and what are the little ones along the way? But in and among all of those levels and those ways of making decisions, I'm left to wonder, what role is seeking God's will played in many of the decisions? How often do we think through our choices in terms of, yes, all the data and the gut and everything else, but also, where is God? What is God doing for me and in me right now? I'm guessing, with the exception of several big life-changing decisions, it's not really going to be all that often that that's really part of our lives. And I don't mean this as a sort of gotcha moment. It's an honest question. And it's an honest reality. We may drop in and pepper our speech with the occasional, the Lord willing, from time to time. But basically, we're accustomed to doing what we want when we want it, because more or less we can. And God doesn't really come into it along the way. And it pushes us in a real sense, and we can become a little bit allergic when we come and invoke the name of the Almighty a little too often into our living, our lives, or even our church. Perhaps it's a result of the sense of liberty that we take and the relative power that we do have in our lives that we gratefully wield. But God's will in our life maybe even sound a little bit superstitious to a rationalistic North American sensibility. Because most of the time that guidance is something that we may see in the rear-view mirror, if at all, as opposed to something guiding us going forward. So, how do we seek God's will in the decisions of where we lead? There's a lot to be said in that and about that. But I wanted to start here. Say what you will about the Old Testament, it doesn't fit well on a bumper sticker. Outside of the beauty of the poetry of the wisdom of the poetry and wisdom books, much else is just too dense to read as ready advice. Which might seem odd to turn then to this Hebrew tradition for a fairly practical question of how do we look for God? Especially one of the histories, Judges being like what I had said, this long story of how Israel comes to be in the enemy's foreign and domestic. These are where so many read Bible in a year plans crash and burn, mine included, because I just sort of get lost in the details. I think that's one of the problems, is that we come reading for detail. We come reading for the who did what to whom when, as opposed to reading for the broader narrative of what is God doing in the big picture. Sure, the history is there and it's interesting as far as it goes, but why we need these texts in the canon is to hear time and again of the way that Israel goes forward and falls back. But God keeps coming and working and engaging Israel all the time. Even in these six short chapters, we cover almost 60 years of history of early coming into Cana and then so the early battles and then 40 years of prosperity, and then the scene changes and then Israel did what God didn't like. So there was another 10 years of sack and rampage. And that's where we get to Gideon. We can concentrate so much on the war and the fighting and everything else that we forget God always coming and saying, even here I will come. Even here I'll rescue. Even here I'll do it. And what's more, I will do it in the way that you know that this is not about you. This is about God. In God's way, in God's reality. And as such, Gideon is just such a story. Like I told the kids, it's full of all of this storytelling about, well, you're not going to do it this way, but we're going to do it in the weird way of God. And just to refresh our notions of who Gideon is, beside the guy who places the Bibles in the hotel room nightstand, Gideon is the unlikely leader in unlikely circumstances. Like I said, he's been ravaged by a horde. Israel has been ravaged repeatedly by the Midianites. And they come, and when we first meet Gideon, he is actively out hiding the crops because they're coming. And the angel of the Lord walks up to him and says, "Greetings, strong and mighty warrior." You kidding? I'm here hiding the crops. How am I strong or mighty? And that sets up this routine of Gideon questioning deeply, what is God doing here and how is it there? And as the story continues, there's surprises again and again as God works through and around Gideon all the time. It's well worth a read if you have time for a couple of chapters. But back to the issue at hand. Gideon, in the midst of all of this, has some decisions to make, and he starts and tests God. And there are, frankly, two ways to read this. First of all, I am the Lord your God. There are no gods but me. Do not test the Lord your God. This could be a fairly bad idea. Gideon, when the angel first comes, says, well, let me show this. And so they organize a way of showing fire from nowhere. And now this whole thing with the police is even more so saying, okay, God, but can I be sure? Can I know? And he proposes these odd tests, looking at the wall with the right amount of dew in the right way to confirm God in all these ways. And we're saying that whether it was a good idea or not, God deals with it. God shows up and says, yeah, this is here. And the moral of the story may be, don't test God. But I'm not sure that that's the only moral that we have to work with. Because we can also read here that when it comes to the stuff of faith, when it comes to the stuff of decision, God also knows and can test and can respond in ways that can amaze us. And sometimes our need for clarity can outstrip even our need for faith. There's much to learn from the Gideon story and the text about seeking the will of God. I think what Gideon does right here is, first and foremost, he asks. He asks for confirmation. He asks for the will of God. He asks and anticipates the answers. I wonder how many decisions of our lives do we end up a little bit awash and at sea with simply because we don't ask, what is your will, God? And maybe we just sort of so anticipate that if we do ask, there won't be an answer, or at least not an answer that we see in the time or the place, so what's the point? But when we ask the question, sometimes we can be surprised by the results. Seldom is it as clear as a wet skin, sheepskin when it ought to be dry, but when we see God's will honestly, and that means being open to whatever God's will is and not simply having our own trajectory confirmed, we can often be surprised by what we get. I have long said that the most important line of the Lord's Prayer is the hardest line there is. Thy will be done on earth as it is in heaven. That alone is a prayer that I can pray both in aspiration and in personal conviction, every day of every year for my whole life. Because it is so big, both to see God's will in me, but also to start seeing God's will in the world that we see and the people that we know, far beyond ourselves. That phrase stretches us time and again to seek fully the will of God beyond our own need, our own comfort, our own expectation. And it's something that we do well to challenge ourselves for often. Secondly, I think there is something to be said for the model of testing what we think we have heard. And this is also what Gideon is doing. While none of us really expect, again, the pattern of dew on the lawn, and certainly at this point we'd all be glad for any moisture whatsoever, tying with, this is what I have in mind, this is what I may have heard of God, But let me test it, does have a good deal of merit. Part of the skepticism that we have in the word of the Lord in day-to-day living is most of the time it's coming from somebody who simply has said something that they're convinced this is the word of the Lord, and it's well past the any critique or community input by that point. I had a friend who came to the convention that God had asked him to buy a horse and to spend the rest of his life riding through the freeways of America, spreading the gospel from horseback. An admirable idea, with a huge number of technical and logistical problems. And it didn't come together, but an idea like that does stick in the mind, because by the time it was, thus saith the Lord, he was already convinced. And there wasn't a whole lot that we could sit down and say, huh, tell me about that calling. How did that take shape for you? Where are you going with it? And I don't say that to belittle this person's faith, not for a moment. But we also know that there is a testing and a challenge of when we hear God's voice, that we also need to say, this is what I hear. Can you hear it with me? One of the most overlooked parts of our baptismal vows is this whole thing where we ask, are you willing to give and receive counsel to your brothers and sisters? And I'm guessing that the receiving of counsel is far more difficult than the giving. And we ask that question because we want this community to be part of a discerning body of finding where and how God is moving. And we need that input time and again. We need it individually and we need it corporately. I wonder what we might come up with if we were to begin asking together not just the question of, well, what's going to happen to Minnow? But the far more important question of what is God's intention for the church in this place? That's a project that no single God can accomplish by itself, or nor should it. And we might be surprised by the results. There is documentation of Menno Simons in the prayer life that he had when he was considering stepping into the leadership of the emerging Anabaptist movement. He, like Gideon, was not quite sure what was going on here. And he made and wrote that his prayer was, if this is your will, God, make it burn in me that I can do no other than what your will is. That prayer was his way of laying out the place to test whether this step into the unknown was really what was intended for him in his life. And thanks be, it did burn, it did call to him, and the Spirit did move. And for me, I know that the Spirit has moved in me in some ways too. I would always say that, should I be a pastor? Not an obvious response. Even after going to seminary, even after coming here, even after practicing all those years, pastor didn't come easy. And some days it still doesn't come easy. But thanks be to God, it has burned in me that I can do no other. And for that, I give thanks. I get it, that all of this seems way up in the sky. By we don't mean it to be. As much as we enjoy the gut feeling that guides us, our internal feeling that we steer ourselves by, we are also invited always into the seeking of God's will for us. There are no guarantees of an easy response or a spoken clear message of, thus saith the Lord, choose A and not B. Though, who knows, we might be surprised. But there is something to it. I invite you to take a risk. Ask God's opinion about something. Test this decision. Seek God's will. Also, I invite you to maybe we expand our prayer life for here in that as well of what is thy will? Where is God leading? And then to talk about what comes to us along the way. We may well be surprised at the directions it might lead. May the God who answers all prayers rest with you, call to you, and bring you to new life in these days and in every decision that you make as God leads forward. Amen.